Welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. As the creator and host of this podcast, it is critical to me to convey to you, our listeners, how much positive power you have inside of you right now, in this very moment. You have the power to change your life. And that could be changing it, like I had to back when I was 23, from a place of kind of being on a road to nowhere, kind of feeling hopeless and stuck, to being on a road to somewhere desirable, someplace good. It could also be changing your life from good to great. And it could also be changing your life from great to, I cannot believe how incredibly blessed and lucky I am to get to live this life. You have that power inside of you, and that is all you need to get started. The rest, you can learn along the way. I started this podcast as a way to bring stories of hope and triumph, as well as resources that will help you along that journey, whatever that might be, whatever your starting place is, or whatever your destination might be. My sincerest hope is that you find it valuable. So let's go. Here is this week's episode. My guest today is Scarlett Lewis. She founded the nonprofit Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement after her son was murdered during the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy in December of 2012. After his death, Scarlett became part of the solution to the issues that we're seeing in our society and the issues that also caused the tragedy. She created the Choose Love Movement and became an advocate for social and emotional learning and character development that teaches children how to manage their emotions, feel connected, and have healthy relationships. The programs have been accessed in all 50 states and 112 countries around the world, reaching more than 1.9 million children. I think that you'll find the conversation with her to be inspiring, moving, and informative. I know I did. So Scarlett, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bobby. It's an honor.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you here, and I've been looking forward to this conversation. So let's jump right in, and would you tell us your story?
Absolutely. Well, this chapter in my life, this part of my story, starts 8 years ago on December 14th, 2012, when my six-year-old son was murdered alongside 19 of his first grade classmates in two first grade classrooms and six educators in one of the worst mass murders in US history. And that morning was just like every other morning. And all of a sudden, the rug of your life is pulled out from under you. And it's absolutely unbelievable that something that happens to other people only can happen to you.
Yeah. Yeah. We always do think it's going to just happen to someone else. We don't expect that. Yeah.
I've seen that happen to other people. I've seen other school shootings. We all have. And we see them. We feel sorry. But we don't think it will ever happen to us.
No, we don't. And I think that Columbine was maybe the first time, and that was what, in the 90s?
Did it
predate that?
Absolutely.
Wow. Yes. That's the first time when I remember.
Yes. And me too, by the way. I remember Columbine. And then a few after, and then Sandy Hook. But it has been going on before then. It's just not something that we paid a lot of attention to. And it's been going on since. Yeah. We see the sensational ones, the ones that make the cover of the paper, where there are lots of fatalities. But this happens far more than we want to know, probably, than we would like to admit. It is our new normal, unfortunately, and it doesn't have to be. It shouldn't be. And that's what I've been working for the last 8 years to try to overcome.
Yeah. So you've mentioned it for 8 years, you've been working on something. Tell us about that, what you're doing.
Well, so I was a single mom when Jesse died and I had a full-time job. I was the sole provider and it was a scary time because I realized that I really needed to be part of the solution. I knew that what happened to Jesse was 100% preventable. You will not hear many people say that. In fact, I've only heard one other person say that, and that was a woman that disarmed her school shooter. But it's true. And thus, I knew that other parents didn't have to suffer like I did and our children. And so I had to quit my job and I started doing research on how Sandy Hook could have been prevented. Mm-hmm. And I got some help from my son, Jesse, who had been murdered in a couple of ways, in a couple of interesting ways. So first of all, we found out that he was a hero. His brave action saved 9 of his classmates' lives before losing his own. And so, you know, his example of heroism or courage really inspired me. I thought, gosh, if my 6-year-old son can stand up to a shooter coming into his first grade classroom after he's murdered his principal and counselor right outside his door, he knew everything that was happening. Yeah. I certainly can stand up and be part of the solution to what happened to him. And then he left us a message on our kitchen chalkboard that he wrote shortly before he died, 3 words, nurturing, healing, love. Mm. And I came home and I saw those words and I knew that Adam Lanza, who was the shooter who had been a student of Sandy Hook Elementary School, whose mother had taught at the school, I knew that if he could have given and received nurturing, healing, love, the tragedy would never have happened. It was as simple as that.
Yeah.
It was simple, but simple isn't always easy. Mm-mm. So then I took that message to a doctoral professor nearby. And I said, I know that it's my mission to get this message into classrooms, but how would I do that? Not having And he said, well, it's called social and emotional learning. So I started doing research on social and emotional learning. And I realized that, wow, these are essential life skills that even as an adult at 44 years old, I don't have. These are skills and tools that we're not born with. We have to learn them. And I'm talking about skills that help you have healthy and meaningful relationships, help you manage your emotions, help you learn from, grow through, and be strengthened by difficulties that happen in your life, how to make responsible decisions. I mean, these are skills that we need. Actually, ironically, they're skills that CEOs look for.
That's right.
And we have to learn them. So in other words, if you don't learn them at home from your parents, now I think I was a relatively good parent. I mean, I had 2 boys. They were my main focus. I loved them so much, and I did the best that I could with the skills and tools I had at the time, but I couldn't give what I didn't have. And so there you go. And neither could my parents. So I went from my home as a child and just through school and college, got out the other side without these essential life skills. So my kids were on track to do the same thing. And I realized, wow, you know, and it's there, it was out there, social and emotional learning. There were decades of research on it. The outcomes were outstanding. Kids that got social and emotional learning, SEL, in their classrooms got better grades and test scores. They had higher attendance, higher graduation rates, less stress and anxiety, less emotional distress, less mental illness. They had less bullying, better classroom climate. I mean, like, and they even had studies that followed kids from kindergarten all the way into adulthood. And the young adults had less substance abuse, less mental illness of all kinds, less violence and anger, even less divorce rates. I mean, everything about it, 100% of the research was positive. And I realized this has to be the focus. So it was kind of interesting. I looked at what was out there. I worked with a lot of teachers. We did a lot of surveying, and we realized that what was out there really didn't fit the bill. Like, for instance, in Sandy Hook, we had a program that was super expensive. In fact, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to train the teachers how to do it.
Oh my goodness.
So it never got out of the box. That's a direct quote I got from the curriculum director. So I thought, wow, all right. I need to create a program that includes everything. Because another thing that we heard was, oh my gosh, there's so many great programs out there. There's SEL, there's character education, there's neuroscience, there's mindfulness, there are programs on trauma and post-traumatic growth and neuroscience, but we can't do all of them. So I said, all right, our kids deserve all of that knowledge. We have it. I want it. And so we, teachers, psychologists, psychiatrists, early childhood development specialists, doctoral professors, all these incredible people came together, and we together created this program that has all of those things in it. It is the most comprehensive social and emotional learning program on the market. In fact, it's lifespan, because, you know, our brains are this incredible organ that we don't pay enough attention to. We certainly don't think about its health as our kids grow up. We think about mental health, but what is that? That's really our mind's health and our brain health. And so we incorporated all of this in the program and made it lifespan. So we start prenatally. That's where the brain starts to develop. In fact, the amygdala, which is the freeze, fight, or flight of our part of our brain, is fully formed at 8 months. And that's in the womb because our brain's main function is to keep us safe. So these babies have to have that implement, not that they can use it that well, but when they get out, and how their mother responds to their environment is informing their baby's brain how to form. Like, should we have a smaller prefrontal cortex? Because like, we're getting out in a very stressful area and we're not going to have to think, we're going to have to run. And then we have infant toddler and some of this was because of my own experience. I was a single full-time working mom. And so I brought my 6-week-old babies to daycare and private and public. And I know that the people that I handed my babies to loved them, but maybe not exactly like I would, but I know that they were kind, good people. They did not know about brain development, and neither did I then. And that is such a crucial time for brain development. Then we go into pre-K through 12th grade. We even have a program. I'm actually wearing the shirt. It's called Choosing Love in Our Brave New World, which is a program specifically designed for the pandemic and bringing kids back in and helping them self-regulate themselves. And then pre-K through 12th grade, we have a home program, we have a community program, and we have programs for businesses as well, because this can benefit all of us. And our school, home, and community programs are free.
Wow.
Because it was really important to me. And people told me, oh, you can't do that. You can't. First of all, nobody's going to value it if you make it free, and you're never going to be able to keep going. Well, here we are 8 years later, and people do value it. Our programs are in over 10,000 schools in every state. In fact, it's the most taught SEL program in a handful of states and 112 countries. So they do
amazing
value quality, and it is getting out there. And these are people, these are courageous leaders that want to be part of the solution. And that is going to be us. I don't know about you, but I've never had anybody come in and solve my problems. And so, you know, where I had to figure something out here myself, and I had a lot of help for sure. And the rest of it is having people come in and understand the importance of this and adopt it themselves. You know, after Sandy Hook, that was a hugely polarizing event for our country. After Sandy Hook, we were either pro-gun or anti-gun. There was no in-between. Mm-hmm. And there was so much anger. And I just felt like that anger was mimicking almost Adam Lanza's anger. And I thought, wow, you can't solve something with the same level of energy. So I wanted to create something where people could come together in what we have in common. And that is the want and need to love and be loved. In that, we are all the same. It doesn't matter how old we are, what color our skin, what language we speak, where we live in the world. We are all the exact same in the want and need to love and be loved and belong. And so here's a place, the Choose Love movement, where it doesn't matter what you think about guns or politics or anything else. You can come here, you can belong, and you can be part of the solution. And there is something that you can do, because everybody wants to do something and they just don't know what to do. We want to take responsibility for what's going on in our world. We don't want to live in an unsafe world. We definitely don't want to send our kids to unsafe schools. We just have to find the courage within ourselves, and we need maybe a little bit of a push in what to do. And that's what the Choose Love movement is.
Yeah. And I think you're so right. I think it is a basic human need that we all have to be loved, to belong, to be accepted. And I wanted to dive in a little bit more to the nurturing, healing love, because I read an article, I think you had written it, and you kind of broke down those three words. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, all of our programming is based on a powerful and profound formula that can lead you to thoughtfully responding with love in any situation, circumstance, or interaction you will ever face. So all of our programming is based on that. It's a common language that everyone speaks, and it all comes from Jesse's message of nurturing, healing love, as well as his example of courage. So I will use nurturing, healing love, and I will walk you through the formula. The first character value in the formula for choosing love is courage. Courage is so important. Science tells us that courage is like a muscle, and we can practice it to strengthen it. And courage is so important. Now, of course, Jesse's courage was extraordinary, and I hope that none of us ever have to face that. But the courage that I'm talking about is the courage that we practice every single day. The courage sometimes to get out of bed and put our best foot forward, the courage to do the right thing, the courage to tell the truth, the courage to be vulnerable in a relationship, the courage to be our authentic self, the courage to face our fear instead of resist, avoid, or numb ourselves. Our lives take a lot of courage to do things right and to be who we are and who we want to be, who we were born to be. And that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
So the first thing that we do in our programming is we teach courage, and then we teach how to practice that, to strengthen that. And then that kind of sets you up to be able to move into the second character value, which is gratitude. And nurturing means loving kindness and gratitude. gratitude is so vitally important. If you understand how we think as human beings, we have a negative bias. So the majority of our thoughts every single day are negative, between 70 to 80%, and over 95% of our thoughts are repetitive. And by the way, that's on a best day. And we're wired like that with our negative bias. So in other words, like a caveman was scanning for a saber-toothed tiger, and it was the caveman that saw the saber-toothed tiger that was going to live to pass down his genes. Our brains want to keep us safe, so we still have that scanning mentality. We don't scan for a saber-toothed tiger because there aren't any more, but we scan for negativity. Every day we're doing this, and we don't even realize it. But once you have the awareness, then, which by the way, everybody does now, it's not too difficult, but now you can overcome it with practice, and gratitude can help you do that because you can only focus on one thought at a time.
It's
an incredible thing. Try it. You cannot focus on two thoughts at once. So in other words, you have your lower energy, negative, angry thoughts, or you can choose to have a grateful thought. So gratitude shifts your lens of focus from negativity over to gratitude. And there's always something to be grateful for. Now, it might take courage to be grateful when things aren't going your way, but you always have that skill and tool to be able to shift your negative thinking to positive thinking. And there's so much research when you think in a grateful way, more opportunities open up. You are healthier, you're happier, etc. And then, so we have nurturing healing. Healing literally means forgiveness. And forgiveness is probably the most important part of my healing journey. It was kind of funny because when people heard that I wanted to put forgiveness in our program for kids, even little kids, everyone said, "Ooh, Scarlett, forgiveness? That's kind of a lofty topic. Do you think that the little kids will even understand what that is?" And the funny thing is, the kids get it. And actually, forgiveness, a lot of times, is the kids' favorite character value. What if you go back and ask them after they've learned the whole formula, a lot of times they'll say forgiveness, and it still blows my mind. And every time I'm like, what? Forgiveness? Why? And a lot of times they'll say, oh, because it's like a superpower, because it feels so good to let it go. Wow. And that's them learning about it. And turns out it's us big kids that have a problem with it. We don't fully understand it. And, you know, if we did, and by the way, coming into the tragedy, I didn't fully understand it. But let me tell you something. I figured it out quickly because I refused to be another victim of Adam Lanza. I was not going to allow this incredibly troubled young man to have any control over my thoughts that impact my feelings, that then impact how I show up in my relationships and how I behave. That's our cognitive triangle. And the part that I could control in that cognitive triangle are my thoughts. And I was definitely going to choose forgiveness because forgiveness was for me the only way that I could cut that cord that attached me to pain. You know, I say forgiveness is taking your personal power back. For me, it was so empowering. And it's not like I still struggle. I'm not perfect. And I have post-traumatic stress disorder. And I still cry probably every day. But I have skills and tools that I use. And, you know, in the big days, like December, the anniversary, December 14th, or on Jesse's birthday that's coming up next week, or on Mother's Day, or on Valentine's Day. I don't know, just big days when you know, it's kind of in my face. I choose to forgive again, because that's been the biggest healing tool that I've had. So healing literally means forgiveness. And it definitely takes courage to forgive when somebody who hurt you doesn't care, doesn't know, or isn't sorry. You don't need any of that, though, however, to make that decision for yourself, because in reality, you're doing it for yourself. You're doing it to take your personal power back. Too often, I think we confuse forgiveness and we think that it's a gift that we're giving somebody who doesn't deserve it. They hurt me. No way am I going to do that for them. But you're overlooking the fact that the gift that you're giving of forgiveness is for you.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful to learn that, hey, the kids get it. The kids get how good it feels, which is really amazing. And then love is compassion in action. So then this is a really important concept, especially now coming out of this social distancing time when, you know, we've been alone, and there's so many people also doing so much for so many, the first responders and everybody, nurses, medical doctors, educators, so many doing so much. And I've seen a lot of articles recently on compassion burnout. And I think it's really important to understand that that doesn't exist. There is no such thing as compassion burnout. When you look at the definition of compassion, it is identifying a need. There are two components: identifying a need and then actively doing something to help solve that need. And it's in the action component where all of, I say, the nurturing, healing love we give out, we get back. Now, if you go back to, so it's actually healing and it's actually energizing. But what there is empathy fatigue. There is empathy fatigue and burnout. Empathy, when you feel, when you put yourself into somebody else's shoes and you feel their pain, that is a painful process. That actually lights up the same receptors in your brain as physical pain. You are feeling their pain, and that can lead to burnout and fatigue. So really, really important for our heroes that are listening, that have been on the front lines and working, start having a more of a compassion mindset that you identify. And it can include empathy. You can empathize and identify with someone. You don't have to empathize with them per se. You don't have to crawl down into the tunnel with them and feel their pain. You can identify, but you could do either. But then remember, compassion is different because it has that action component. When you actively do something to help ease another's pain. And that's when science, this is all science, which I love. That's my favorite part. That's when science says that all of the nurturing, healing love you give out, and even more, comes back to you. And so when you have the courage to be grateful, even when things aren't going your way, the courage to forgive, even if the person who hurt you isn't sorry, and the courage to step outside of your own busyness and distraction, even your own pain and suffering, to help somebody else, you are choosing love. And when you thoughtfully respond with love, you take your personal power back.
Yeah. Wow. I love those distinctions. So many questions that come to mind there. First of all, because I think this is so important, because it seems like courage underlies everything. You said, Scarlett, that there are ways that people can practice. Can you just share like what that would look like? Because I think that people think some people have courage or you don't. And I don't believe it at all. I think it's a muscle, just like what you said. So what would you, I guess, recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you two that I share a lot and that probably kids favorite. Big kids too, by the way, I do them. One is a brave breath. And so we put our right hand on our heart and our left hand on our belly. And we take a breath in through our nose, expanding our belly like a balloon. So if we make our shoulders rise and fall, that actually increases anxiety. But I'm talking about breathing out of your belly. So taking a nice deep breath through your nose, we're human beings and we were designed to breathe through our nose, and count to four slowly, hold for four, and then breathe out for six. That stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, that calms you down, and that enables you to get in between what is happening and how you're going to respond. Otherwise, we impetuously react and we really don't have any control over that. But if you can calm yourself down, you can thoughtfully, you can literally turn and face what's happening with courage and thoughtfully respond. So we call that the brave breath. And it is incredible. We have heard stories of kids using their brave breath, going home and teaching their parents brave breath during harrowing times. There was one time in Hawaii. Hawaii is a big choose love state. And that's not surprising, right? It's called choose aloha there. And they had what I call the missile crisis. They all have apps on their phone, on their phones, and they have an alert if North Korea launches a missile. They know that it would take 17 minutes to get there. So they all have plans. I have ambassadors in almost every state that represent Choose Love. So I have one there. And she said her plan with her husband was to go to the hospital. And everyone has their plan. It was Saturday. And so the kids were home. And as you can imagine, everybody's panicking. People were throwing their kids down manholes and pushing them in tubs and things like that. And that Monday morning, we started getting calls to our Choose Love schools. And the parents were saying, what are you teaching our kids? Because in the moment, they were trying to teach us brave breath and brave pose. So what's going on? We want to come in. We want to learn this. And the amazing thing is, so, you know, some of the criticism sometimes of techniques that are taught at school, they're just at school. They're just something you do during that time period. And then they're put away, but this becomes part of your life. It's what you do in different situations. And so that's a beautiful thing. The brave pose was created by Amy Cuddy, and it's literally an expansive pose that helps you access your executive function. It could be like mine is standing like Wonder Woman with my chin up and my feet out and my hands on my hips. And so it evokes, you know, really good feelings of confidence and power. And there are other benefits to that. And so I do that pose before I speak in front of any audience. You'll see me over there doing my Wonder Woman pose. So those are just a couple of things, but we have lots in the program, lots of ways to learn how to be more courageous, how to get into that present moment where life is happening right here and right now, so that you can take your personal power back and you can choose how you respond.
Yeah. And I think choosing how you respond, I think about what, you know, Stephen Covey wrote about the pause, the space between the stimulus and the response, and just that deep breath. And it's not people like, oh yeah, I've heard take a deep breath, but there is neuroscience behind why it is so important. I mean, it really does make a difference. So I love that. I love that the kids are also taking it home and teaching their parents and getting them interested. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you too, because I loved how you put it about forgiveness. It cuts the cord that attaches you to the pain. Mm-hmm. And I think that begs the question, because I also like how you said, you know, you have to choose forgiveness more than once, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a one-time event. how does someone choose to forgive? Like, how do they go through that process?
I think that it's really important that you understand that it's a choice, and it's a powerful choice. You want your personal power back. I don't know. I see a lot of people struggling with it. I've been told by people in Sandy Hook that weren't happy that I was talking about forgiveness. You know, look, this is something that you don't forgive. Don't you understand that? And for me, though, I don't want anyone to control my thoughts in a negative way. And those, of course, impact how I feel. That impacts how I show up for my son and in my other relationships. And forgiveness for me was the only way to take my personal power back. I don't know another way, but I also respect people that don't want to do it. I see people in my own family that have a hard time with forgiveness. And I just think that it's a personal choice, but if you do not want that person to continue to make you feel bad, then you, and literally, like, I walked through a visualization. I felt like I was attached to the shooter with a cord, an umbilical cord, not that ran out of my belly button, but from my side into his. And I felt like all my personal power was flowing from me through the cord into the shooter in the form of anger. Mm-hmm. And I was depleted. I was depressed. I had no energy. And forgiveness for me was a big set of scissors. It was a choice. I am going to take these scissors and I'm going to cut that cord that attaches me to pain. So I took the scissors, I cut the cord, and all of my personal power started running back into me. It felt mm-hmm. so good because I had cut the cord that attached me to pain. And, you know, but it doesn't mean it starts with a choice and then it becomes a process. It does have to be a process. It does not mean that you're not going to fall back into anger. But if you know that and you wake up one morning and you're really mad, then you understand that the process is you take a deep breath, you take a little bit of a step back and you make that cut again. You just keep going. Somebody said in one of my workshops, I imagine tons of umbilical cords coming out from all over me. And I just started on one and I'm going to keep working on them. I love that.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I think it's a great visualization because I have to tell you, like, as I was reading some of your articles, when you speak about the shooter, when you speak about Adam, the compassion that you seem to display for him, like he was bullied, and that it kind of blew me away.
Oh, I have a tremendous amount of compassion for Adam. I think people want to, they understand if I was really angry and then there was this point that I turned off and I forgave. But in reality, I knew that somebody that could do something so heinous must have been in a tremendous amount of pain. I knew that from the beginning. I mean, you know, people don't snap. We'd like to think that they snap because then there's nothing you can do about it. If people just go out and they snap, then I'm not personally responsible because I don't know when somebody's going to snap. But I can tell you for absolute sure that Adam Lanza did not snap. This, first of all, was carefully planned, but this started when he was young, this seething anger and rage when he was, I mean, you know, I actually didn't really want to read his history, believe it or not, but I found out about things. People would tell me things. I would run into friends of his and they would tell me. I know in first grade that his mom and he made all these birthday invitations. They put him in a backpack. He went to school. He passed them all out to all of his, all of his classmates. They weren't his friends. And no one came. So, I mean, it's just a series of not just disappointments, though. He was bullied. He was isolated, frequently seen in the cafeteria, shaking and crying. And the only person that was there for him was the janitor. Love you janitors, but yeah, you know, that's tough. He was alone. He eventually was graduated without enough credits because they really just didn't know what to do with him, but he spent a lot of time at home, and they were supposed to even check up with him there, state mandated checks if you've got a student at home, which they didn't do. And you know, he may have been abused by a trusted adult. There was just a lot of things that went on that I think to myself, wow, if I was treated that way, and, you know, there was, he had, you know, may have had Asperger's, and I know that we don't use that diagnosis anymore, but, you know, I don't know if I were in his shoes, if I wouldn't have done the same thing. I mean, I would like to think that I wouldn't. I don't know. And so I feel compassion for him. I understand his anger. I really do. I know that it could have been stopped. In fact, there was some sort of post on social media. I know that caused a lot of, ruckus at Newtown High School, where a student posted, "I wish that I could have given Adam a hug." And everything, you know, everybody blew up. The girl was sent home. And interestingly enough, she has a brother that is autistic. And she meant, if someone had given him a hug, perhaps that might not have happened. You know, and we're just so on edge about things right now that we can't relax into compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, because compassion, connection, love, kindness, those are the things that can reduce and prevent grievances. When you look on a pathway to violence, it starts with a grievance, it ends in an attack. And the things that reduce and prevent grievances are connection, relationships, compassion, love. It's pretty simple.
Wow.
Simple isn't always easy, but we need to start moving in that direction.
Yeah. And on that note, there is something, and I don't know, I think it was maybe your article on Thrive Global, but I don't know. Could have been one on Medium. I don't know. You were talking about, we like to think about things as what, good or evil. And then you made the point about, you know, hurt people, and it's not evil per se. You know, could you just, hopefully I'm not completely messing up what you're saying, but do you remember writing about that?
Yes. No, I think that I was talking about how we tend to view ourselves. So something like Sandy Hook happens, right? You think, oh my God, good guy, bad guy, for sure, right? I mean, that's what our brains want, to get our hit of dopamine. Okay, let's figure out this situation. He's the bad guy. I am definitely the good guy. Ding. Okay, what's for lunch, right? But in reality, life isn't that clear cut. It really isn't. Because I'm not saying that we're not all the good guys, but I'm saying that instead of seeing others as bad guys, maybe we could see them as hurt people. And if we do that, rather than dealing with it the way that we do, maybe we work towards helping them. And helping them before they get to the point where they feel that the only way out is to take themselves out. They know they're going to commit suicide, but take out as many people as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easier said than done. I will say that it's easier said than done. And, you know, I'm sure that your audience is like, oh, that sounds great. How do you do that? Well, I am doing that. I am doing that with the Choose Love movement and the programming and resources that I'm giving away. This programming literally teaches us how to thoughtfully respond with love in any situation, circumstance, or interaction. So, in other words, when something happened with Adam early on, I would hope that a school that is choosing love would have responded in a different way, kinder, more loving, more inclusive, more connected, more compassionate.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect segue too, like, because I was blown away when I read, you know, that you're giving this away. Like, this is free. If someone, like, how do people engage with you, or how can they find out more if they are? Yeah.
Please. Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to say that this is a movement, and this has all been by word of mouth. So I created this in the beginning as a movement where everyone can come together. If you remember, in what we all have in common, the want and need to love and be loved and belong, we are going to be the ones that have to create the world that we want to live in. And right now is a unique time in our history because we are all out of our comfort zone. Sometimes it's just like here and there, but I don't know. I don't remember a time when everyone all over the world has been out of their comfort zone. And the amazing, unique thing about that is that we're all in our growth zone. That means that right now we can create the world that we want to live in. And so so we're all part of the solution, all of us. And it means that there is something that we can do, and we have to do something. And so I encourage everybody to go to our website, chooselovemovement.org, and take the concept to your schools. We've already got emails and letters written that you can send your teachers and your administrators and say, hey, I heard about this. Do we have an SEL program? Most likely they'll say, yeah, we do. And you can say, really? Okay, well, what is it? And they'll say, I don't know. They may rattle off a name and just say, well, do we do that every day? Is it part of our culture? You know, I've never heard of it. Do we have it on our walls? Is it embraced by everyone? Because that's how you get those incredible results from social and emotional learning. And by the way, parents, these are essential life skills that your kids are going to use for the rest of their lives, in every aspect of their lives, when their parents, in their jobs, in their communities. So you want them to have these. You want to have these. I mean, I learned a lot of this when I was 44 years old, and it changed my life. And the one thing we all had in common when we were creating this is at the end of each session, you know, when we were having brainstorming sessions and things like that, we all said, oh, wow, what would my life have looked like had I known this when I was a lot younger? It would have been different, but that's okay. And so go to the chooselovemovement.org and please help spread the word. Please help spread word on your social media with your friends and following. Take it to your schools, bring it into your home. We've got incredible resources for families. You can hang a calendar on your refrigerator and you guys can practice. Remember, this is practice. Like, you might be saying, you know what, social and emotional learning, I know all of that. Well, it's not enough to have it in your head. You actually have to practice these skills and tools every single day. And life is this beautiful thing that it gives us the opportunity to do this every day, all day long. So do it with your kids. Do it when you're driving. It feels good. It strengthens your brain. Probably one of your most important organs that you don't think that much about. And it can really probably most importantly, it will help your relationships, help you become closer, help you become more present. in your families and with those that you love. And of course, that is the way to live your life with the fewest regrets. It kind of all comes around in a circle.
Yeah. And what you were saying there too, it's not enough to know about it or know of it. I heard someone say this one time, like, that doesn't you no good if it's just a book on your shelf. You need to be able to live it to the point where when you need it the most, it's automatic and it's there for you. So one final thing too, did you want to mention, you have a podcast right?
Yes, absolutely.
And a book.
Yes. So I wrote a book called, drum roll, please, Nurturing Healing Love. And of course, Nurturing Healing Love. And it's about my first 6 months of my journey. And we have another book coming out about the foundation and that journey. I do have a podcast called Choose Love, and it's everywhere that podcasts are. And we have all the social media, and we have a book club. We've got a daily email called Daily Dose of Love. We were getting so much positive feedback from all over the world that we decided to put it into an email and send it out to everybody that's following us. So every day, everybody at 8 a.m. Eastern gets an email in their inbox. I promise you that this will not just be one more email. It is how schools, homes, and communities across the planet are choosing love. Every single day, you'll get little examples of this. And it's so fun. I mean, little things that we hear, it's incredible. The other day, I found out that Nagoya City in Japan, now they've been translating the program for their schools, is becoming a Choose Love City. And the thing that is mind-blowing to me is that this is happening somewhat independent of me. I learn about it. I had Tim Shriver, who created the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. He was in China and he was at a function. He was taking a video on his camera and he was asking people, what programming do you have over here in China? We're talking about inclusion and social and emotional learning. And he was with a group of people and they said in a very thick Chinese accent, we have Choose Love. And he's like, what did you just say? And they said, Choose Love is the name of our program. And Tim's like, oh my God, Scarlett, you're going to love this. So, I mean, it is. And why would it go all over the world? Because it's what we all have in common. It's about love. And our outcomes are phenomenal, just mind-blowing. Why? I think it's because we go there. We talk about love and connection and belonging. And that's why we're here. That's what we all want, big kids and little kids.
It's what we all want. It's what we all need. I think that we recognize universal truth in it, you know?
Yes.
Wow. This has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for being a guest. And more importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Bobby. And thank you for the work that you're doing. It's really important. There are lots of people going through really difficult things out there. And to know that you can overcome. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're there so that you can learn lessons and be strengthened by them and literally turn around and help somebody else. I mean, that's really the key to life. And so you are helping us with that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And it's all about helping each other, right?
Exactly.
I hope that you found tremendous value in that conversation. I was so moved by Scarlett's courage, her compassion, and her passion for the change that she's making in the world. It only feels right that my three insights for thriving are centered on Jesse's note, nurturing, healing, love. Number one, nurturing. I thought that it was interesting how Scarlett mentioned that our brains are wired to scan for negativity. It's part of our survival. And yet, we can overscan for that negativity to the point that we can feel bombarded and overwhelmed by it. I love the shift to gratitude. And I know that this is a topic that's come up before on the podcast, but it bears repeating. Gratitude can be simple things that we actively feel. You know, so for the example, the gratitude of having loved ones around us or being grateful for our health or the beauty of a sunset, but it shifts our focus from the negative to the positive. Number two, healing, which is all about forgiveness. I absolutely love the visual that Scarlett talked about as cutting the cord that attaches me to the pain. That was so powerful for me. The other thing that really resonated for me was that she talked about it as a choice, which I knew, but a choice that we have to make more than once. I think that it's easy to think it's a one-time event. And to me, it's hopeful knowing that it's not a one-time event, right? Because if I forgive once and it doesn't stick, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. It just means that I have to make the choice again, which to me is sort of like working out, right? If I do one set of bench presses, I probably won't see much gain. But if I do the work consistently over time, I will. And finally, number three, love, which is all about compassion. A couple of things that really stood out to me as Scarlett spoke about compassion. First of all, it's different than empathy in that it has the action component. And she spoke about it as identifying the need or pain and then actively doing something about it. And then the second part of that was when she spoke about the shooter, Adam, I was blown away by the level of compassion that she had for him. I could feel her compassion for the little boy who is isolated and bullied and ignored. And the other thing that I'd say, that the overarching thing, is how courage plays such a part of all three of these things. It takes tremendous strength and courage to choose love. I encourage you to learn more about the Choose Love movement and share the message with others. Thanks again for tuning in to Unyielded. I hope that you're enjoying the stories as much as I am. And I was just talking to someone the other day, and I said that I feel like doing these interviews for the last year has been one of the best learning experiences of my life. And I hope that you have found it valuable too. I also think that Scarlett is a perfect example of someone who wasn't destroyed by her difficulties, but rather strengthened by them. A truly fabulous example of thriving no matter what.